This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Welcome to Heart and Soul with me, Lauren Booth, your place to reflect. When I first came to Islam, one of the questions that my family asked me was, how are you going to give up bacon? That's a big one because we're British. And how are you going to make these changes in your life? I had an ordinary life for a journalist, smoking, drinking, probably partying, if I'm honest, because that's what journalists still largely do. And how did these changes come? They come with the spiritual awakening of what is good for yourself and people around you. Kathleen Toomey joins me again to explore this way of life. She is an aquatic instructor by profession, but holds a BA as well in Islamic Studies from Omdurman, University of Sudan, and is currently working alongside Marcus Bin Zayed Islamic Center on its cultural and Islamic public programs. Welcome, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for having me today, Lauren.
Absolute pleasure. We spoke previously about the aspect of modesty and changing from a lifestyle of the beach and health to you wear niqab, to covering in public, what some people will call an extreme expression of modesty. But I really want us today to take a look at what were the early changes in you spiritually when you said, La ilaha illallah, Muhammad Rasulullah, I testify there is no God but God, and that Muhammad is the final prophet and messenger of God.
Well, I would have to say after making that statement, I felt a big weight off my shoulders.
A weight?
Yeah, like the burden was lifted off me.
What burden were you carrying?
Well, let's say maybe the burden of life. Let's face it, a lot of us do think life like that, huh? A burden, difficult, hard times, you know. Hence, aren't we always searching for the good times to try to get rid of those or subside those hard times that we either don't want to face or we find difficult to face, you know? For me, one of the big points of accepting Islam was because of the direction it gave me in that, which helped reduce that weight, you know? It gave me direction to answers in life, you know, not answers about life. Why does this happen? Why does that happen? Why do these people die? Why is life so short? Why? I meet some people for a long time in my life and others only, you know, 2 days, you know. What is the wisdom behind that? What is this all about? What is this life about? You know, it helped me to, it gave, as I say, direction for the purpose of my life, you know, which I never really sort of contemplated that much. Although, you know, having said that, I was quite a staunch Catholic, Roman Catholic in my belief. That's what I realized it was that connection with God, you know, that I knew intrinsically, you know, in my nature that I had to have, you know. So upon saying, La ilaha illallah, Muhammad Rasulullah, it connected for me, you know. And I will say probably, again, over a gradual period of time, like the initial connection was there, but for me to really feel that, embrace it, see it in my life, you know, it's ongoing, you know, as I say, it's gradual, and the fog cleared, you know, as days went by.
This is this idea of a weight of life being a burden of it being hard to bear is something that I've read about, that when people accept a faith, actually any faith that believes in a greater power or being or the unseen, Often, critics will say, well, that person was too weak for modern life, or they'd failed, or they had some mental problem. It's as if, men in their 40s get cars and girlfriends and women find faith because it's all got a bit of a midlife crisis. Mm-mm. Does it have to be a crisis? Were you in a crisis? Was it a failing on your part?
At the time I embraced Islam...
What I'm saying is it's being described as if faith is a crutch. Is that all it is?
Well, I guess in my case, no, I wouldn't say that. You know, yeah, I can understand what you mean. In some of my family members often say, oh, yeah, religion is just like a kind of cop-out, you know, just helps people to get through their problems. But, I mean, surely enough, yeah, you know, surely, you know, without it, where are we, you know? I won't say at that particular time it was a crisis before I became Muslim, but I will say actually shortly after I had embraced Islam, you want to talk about crisis or direction or problems, is that within about a year after I embraced Islam, I married a local where I was living in Malaysia at the time. And a year after my marriage, almost to the day, he passed away. And he passed away while I was visiting my family in Australia. So, you know, you don't talk about crisis or situations like that, you know. That is something that, you know, Islam helped me so much, to the point where my own sister said to me when I returned, you know, when I was leaving, because she was the one who, dropped the penny. But she was so astonished. She was like, how do you handle this? You know, she was like, I can only just see that it's your faith that keeps you together, you know, because truly, I mean... Having your husband die after you've only been married for a year is one thing, but then being like on, you know, one side of the globe to another almost, you know, at least far enough apart, you know, where you can do nothing about it, you know, and to really be able to let go of that. I mean, I'm not going to say I didn't feel that sadness, of course. You know, I jumped on the first plane and got there as quick as I could, but it was all said and done, you know, by the time I got there, because as we understand in Islam, to bury the deceased, to give it their rights and respect is of utmost importance. And as much as that, you know, I wanted to be there, of course, no doubt, I could understand that point. But, you know, so in terms of crisis, I have to say that Allah, that God, the Creator, was the one who really gave me that peace, really gave me that ability to accept something that under normal circumstances would have been almost impossible, you know. And kind of reflecting on this in terms of the tenets of faith and things like that, and looking at now the time of Ramadan and time of fasting and our time of giving charity and things, I see that this is part of it, you know, that it builds the human being. It builds the human being's moral character to improve them, to be able to make them stable, you know, in various situations, you know, especially in situations like this.
Let's talk about this more practically. I can say I like flowers. It doesn't make me a flower. I can say I'm going to be a good person. It doesn't mean I'm going to be a good person. What were the, you know, Islam is often described, you know, in newspaper reports. It's made to look as something that really is just in the physical realm. You wear the clothes, you peck the floor, you go and do harm, or you're invisible, or maybe you're quite a good person. There is no spirituality spoken about. Yet you're speaking about spirituality. What were the practical elements of that help?
Well, understanding for me, and I guess, you know, for all of us as Muslims, when we do put our heart and soul, and rightly, you know, the title of the show, into our belief, into our life, is that, you know, Islam, one thing I noted about it is that it's a way of living. And that's what really makes the difference. It's not just those rituals of praying, fasting, giving charity, wearing a dress. But as I was saying just now, you know, the tenets of the faith actually help to build us and make that change that we seek, you know, by fasting in Ramadan, for example, feeling what the others feel who don't have, who have not only less than us, but don't have at all, you know, to feel that a hardship, you know, to be able to go along with that. Charity, giving charity in Ramadan, of course you see it here, especially in the Gulf, but amongst all Muslims, of giving charity at that time to help reduce or rid that stinginess and greed that inevitably overtakes us from life, you know, and the things that we're involved in, you know. Making that connection with the Creator daily in prayer to say, hey, I come from somewhere and I'm going to be going back somewhere too. You know, to be able to know that that one who created me and gave me my existence is the one ultimately in control of all affairs, but is there for me, you know, to build that stability, to give that ease. So when times like this, as I mentioned, and the crisis that just hit, it's like, well, where do I go? You know, who's going to help me out of this one? You know, and truly, truly, it is only that, having that stability, having that faith, knowing that there is a better situation to come from it, you know, that it's part of life, but there is something good to follow, you know, follow up with, and it's all going to happen.
It's time for us to take a short break now. You're listening to Heart and Soul on QF Radio, and we'll be back after this.
You know, something must be wrong when almost every single song has sex as its basis. When rap stars get famous after making lyrics that are shameless. When a woman is expected to sleep with a man who doesn't even know what her name is. And when artists are paid to degrade the very woman that have made them. To the point they are nothing more than pieces of plastic that we can dispose of once they are no longer attractive. It's sickening and sadistic that this world's become so misogynistic. And you can call me unrealistic, but just listen to the statistics. 7 in 10 men view porn, while over 75 million are addicted. 68 million requests a day for pornographic pictures, making 1 in 4 searches sexually related. It's like nobody even knew she existed until she got naked, degraded and abused over and over again just to gain millions of views. It's a shame we've subdued to a definition of beauty which is so misconstrued, as we judge each other's looks off of Facebook likes, Instagram pictures to filter off what we really look like. See, we are so obsessed with our outside, we have slowly lost sight of who we really are in real life. I mean, it's sad to see so many teens lose their self-esteem, looking at these magazines thinking they have to look like what they see. Please, you are worth much more than a 2D image on a screen. You are a living, breathing human being. If only you knew what you really mean. Just look in your history books and begin to read of all the girls in the world who are capable to achieve, and you will surely see with certainty females like Fatim al-Fihri, who opened the first ever university, Rufaid al-Islamiyya, the first nurse to perform surgery, and Aisha bint Abi Bakr, the greatest female scholar in eternity. It's a shame you probably haven't even heard of these great female prodigies. Honestly, we don't need to give up our modesty in order to be successful. For you are worth much more than a commodity that is sexual. You have so much more potential. If only you knew your worth, you could be like the greatest of all women to have walked this earth, like Mary, the mother of Jesus, chosen by Allah to be an example for the believers, a woman who stood strong even when she was abused, falsely accused and ridiculed for things she'd never ever do, so it didn't really matter when there was nobody else beside her, for she knew that God was Ar-Razzaq and her ultimate provider, and she had her trust in him alone. Just like Asiya, the wife of Fir'aun, a woman who was brave and courageous, stood up for what was right and didn't let anybody change this, a woman who was fearless and laughed in the face of death, for she gave up the riches of this life for a palace in the next. Next up, Khadija, the mother of the believers, a wealthy merchant who had nurtured the Prophet for over 25 years, his first wife, the love of his life, and the mother of his kids. She was the first to believe in him when nobody else ever did. She just is beyond any words that can make you understand. So much so that even Allah sent her his salam. She was grand, and Allah assured her, just like her daughter, Fatima, the master of all women in paradise, a woman who would shine so bright, she was nicknamed as Zahra, the splendid one with the most generous of hearts, a woman who gave up so much of her food, she had no choice but to fast. She would fight on behalf of her father, even as a little girl. And such are the examples of the greatest woman in the entire world. And it had nothing to do with how they looked, but for who they truly were. So ignore the standard of success defined by society. When God has said that the best of mankind are those who have piety, regardless of your shape, your color, or your race. For God does not look at your bodies, nor does he look
You're
at your face.
You're listening to Heart and
Rather,
Soul on QF Radio with me, Lauren Booth, sharing gems of knowledge with
face.
Us today.
So
is
at the
Sister
end of the
Kathleen
day, it doesn't matter what
Australia.
The people
Welcome.
Say or who they think Welcome. You are.
Thanks a lot.
We were talking before the break about the practical aspect of Islamic way of life affecting our heart, really, and our way of seeing problems in our life. I wonder if we could just take a little stroll through a day in the life of a modern woman, because we're not trying to go back to the 7th century. We are modern women, and we live in this context and this time, and yet we do things differently.
Differently, yeah, in terms of technology and the way we may live. But my question is, like, are we really that different anyway from the 7th century or even further back, even from the first man?
Do you mean as humanity?
Yeah, as humans, you know. When you talk about living in a modern world, you know, I guess amongst other technologies and things, as I say, you know, hey, I mean, some people say that the technology of the past was even greater than, more sophisticated than we have. So who's to say? But, you know, in terms of humans and human need, you know, has that really changed? You know, that is really the question, I think, when we look at living in, whether you want to say today's society or 7th century society, whenever you want to talk about, you know, the needs of human beings really are one. They haven't changed, you know. And surely God is the one who knows that, who has created human beings in such a way.
The expectations have changed massively in the last 200 years. You know, this the modern idea of democracy, equality, women's voting was a new thing, having rights for women. Surely the whole concept of being a woman has changed.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that point about rights and women voting. It makes me think, you know, back in the time of the Prophet, when God revealed this belief or this way of life to him, is that, you know, he had given the rights of women. When you want to talk about rights of women, you know, they were given the right to own and dispose of their own property, you know. And it makes me think, well, when did we get that in our society? Not till at least the 20th century. So, you know, the rights of inheritance or owning and disposing of property, these things really, it makes me think that, hey, society today is really in need of those rights that were given how many thousands of years ago? I mean, we seek rights as women. So we're just talking about modesty and respect and good treatment. You know, why are we looking, you know, what's the saying? I can't even think now, but, you know, looking in all the wrong places, you know, when things may be just staring us right in the face.
In one night, I was pregnant with my second daughter, And I was 8.5 months pregnant, and I was showing off how I could do everything, to be quite honest. I went to a Labour Party conference in the United Kingdom, and I can do anything, and I can work late, and I started to have real pain, and I thought, wow, am I going to miscarry because of my stupidity at midnight? I went outside, it was raining, I looked for a taxi, there was a huge queue, and I said to the two men at the front, young men, sharp suits, Labour Party workers, please, do you mind if I take the next taxi? And they looked at me with disgust and said, why? I had this huge bump. I said, because I'm not feeling very well and I'm pregnant. They said, that is your problem. And they pushed me out of the way and they got into the taxi and I sat on the side of the road. And you know what? I just wept. And I really wanted someone to step up and look after me at that moment.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. And it makes me think of the reality, I guess, of our own situation, especially as women, when we were talking a little bit earlier about respect and rights and things, that's the reality, you know, of us that we may face as women. You know, there are certain things that I believe, you know, it doesn't make us more inferior or less than, you know, it just makes us different.
How does that need stop society slipping into prejudice? You know, this thing about, oh, we'll protect the women by putting them all in one area, or how can that become oppression? How does, you know, the Islam that you love negate taking your rights away? How does it give you rights? How do you feel it gives you rights?
Islam, how does Islam give me rights? Ooh. Well, I guess I would have to say it gives me rights from my creator. Because truly, you know, in society, when we look as your own example, you know, being a woman, that at the end of the day, people wanted what they wanted and they didn't really even seem to care about you being a woman compared to them being a man, you know, and there is clearly a difference, your situation, you know, truly human beings can only get their rights, you know, from their creator. And this is why, you know, I believe for myself, you know, the peace and the stability that I found, you know, in Islam, where nobody could give me what I sought, you know, but yet my creator could give that all for me. And truly that, as I said at the beginning, was just a weight off my shoulders, you know.
God treats everybody as equals before him. The only superiority is in piety, and we ask to be amongst those who are pious, because piety also means taking ourselves to account. Some of the most blessed people in Islamic historic understanding were those who were known at the end of the day to make prayers for their enemies and to ask forgiveness for not those that they'd wronged. That's something we should do automatically. Wow, I did that nasty thing today. I really need to pray for that person and ask for forgiveness. But to pray for those who'd done us wrong, made us feel bad, just, you know, made us feel fear or anger or jealousy directed at us. And we say, I hope you do better tomorrow. And I hope your family's okay. And you mean it. And that is part of piety. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala provide us all with good hearts and with better futures and understanding of one another and of what it means to be a human being today in a good way.
Ameen.
We'll be back next time for more Heart and Soul. Assalamu alaikum. The producer for this series is Ihab Al-Sheikh.